This is the Innovation Engine podcast from 3Pillar Global, your home for conversations with industry leaders on all things digital transformation and innovation.
Welcome back to the Innovation Engine podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Carl Rudo, and I'm excited to be speaking with 3Pillar's healthcare industry lead, Steve Rowe, about innovation in the healthcare space and why it's alive and well. Among the topics we'll cover are why innovation has traditionally been a challenge in healthcare, the combination of forces that are changing that dynamic at long last, and why healthcare innovation will ultimately lead to improved patient experiences and people living longer, healthier lives. Because after all, isn't that the point? Steve helps payers, providers, and healthcare companies of all types tap into the transformative power of technology so they can elevate their standards of care online, offline, and everywhere in between. Steve comes to us after leadership roles at a number of healthcare companies, including Director of Strategy at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City and Director of Product Strategy at GetWell Network. He also drove digital transformation initiatives for a number of healthcare companies at Accenture Interactive, and he's founded two healthcare startups as well. Steve brings a unique set of experiences and expertise with him, so I'm excited to get to talk with him today. Steve, welcome to the Innovation Engine.
Thanks, Carl. Excited to be here.
Let's set the stage for this episode by talking a little bit about the difficulties of actually driving innovation in the healthcare space. It's a complex question and topic, but how did we get here?
So I think there's a couple of considerations, right? Like one of the things that stops us from innovating in healthcare is just there's bad incentives, right? Like everyone knows that there are the structural reasons of why you can't focus on preventative care or getting reimbursed for certain things or payers innovating, but also having to give employers what they want. That's a huge set of challenges. I think though that in the focus on that, what gets lost is a difficulty in some of like the more tactical blocking and tackling on an implementation level. So I've been, you know, in various health strategy roles in healthcare for the last 15 years, working with health systems, payers, you know, pharma, distributors. And one of the reasons I joined 3Pillar is like, they don't really need me. You know, like these leaders, they know what those constraints are. And then within those business constraints, like they know what to do. They are experts, right? Like working with a VP of Pop Health, like she knows what needs to be done. Her team, they are experts in that area. Same with, you know, the business leadership, same with the customer experience leadership. Like they've got it. They don't need me coming and saying like, hey, have you considered X, Y, or Z? I think the bigger challenge that they encounter is then acting on that, like executing those strategies, right? And it's not because they don't know what to do at a tactical level. They do. It's that everything hinges on software. Like it is 2024. That is the world we live in. And if you step back, I think the meta story of the last 20 years as healthcare started to digitize and software has become more prominent is that engineering talent was just a scarce resource, right? Like there are exceptional engineers at every provider organization. They're at every payer organization. Like engineers are good. It's just that there's not enough of them. If all the new requests coming into those engineering teams stop today for custom dev work, taking care of tech debt, updating the old systems, doing integrations, if you stop that all now, there would still be years of work to do. And that pace is only accelerating. So I think, you know, that's the big challenge right now is you have all these clinical leaders, business leaders, customer service leaders. They're ready to go. They're ready to innovate, but they don't have an underlying tech stack and engineering capacity to help them move forward. Now, I think that's changing, which we can get into in a bit.
Yeah, I'm curious how you think about the product side of things because, you know, the business leaders know what needs to be done to solve these problems. And I was recently with a with a regional payer, and we were talking to one of their IT, some of their IT leaders. And the one thing they said that was interesting to me was that it's, they know what needs to be done. They understand the requirements. They create estimates for the, for how much work's going to be, but there's a struggle in the business around understanding one, how do, what is committed to, right? What are they actually getting from that? Because most IT teams at this point, most development teams at this point have moved into a world of agile development, and the business leaders are still stuck in a world of waterfall. And we're talking about big, massive projects, migrating, for example, migrating your EDI claims processes, right? Migrating your population health management solution to a new provider, a new solution. So these are big projects they're working on, and they're struggling, I think, to some extent, to explain what the outputs are. And so is there also a gap in product talent, right? In being able to translate from the business to engineering, but also maybe more importantly, from engineering to the business to help them understand what do iterative processes look like? How do you define and build a product in a modern way that's going to meet your needs better? And so I'm curious, do you see anything there from the product side as well? I know we don't have enough engineers, but also is there a product deficiency that exists in the market as well?
Certainly. From what I've seen with the health systems, the payers, the pharma manufacturers I've worked with, that digital innovation capacity has never been fully built out, right? There was a lack of engineering talent within those orgs. And as a consequence, you had a lack of product and design talent. The people that are there are talented. there's just not enough of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of, the kind of this cycle that healthcare organizations have gotten stuck in is we've almost trained the business leaders to think about waterfall approaches to building product as opposed to agile approaches to building product, and where you're iterating and experimenting. And, historically the way its engineering team has been allocated, because the engineering team and product teams are underwater with all the work, historically it has been like, okay, hey, VP of pharmacy, like, we're here for you now. We're going to give you a team for 6 months. What do you need? Like, give us that list of requirements. We will build this, but then we got to go to the next thing. And so that's certainly a challenge. That's certainly a challenge. And, I think that that's a product of, again, this like backlog in some of these ossified systems and, incompatible data and siloed data that I think we're at a moment where we can kind of escape that dynamic and get to that agile build with some of the new tools.
So can you talk a little bit about the underlying systems that are making innovation difficult? I mean, I think we've talked a little bit about how the people involved are either overloaded or maybe they don't quite understand how to bring a new product to market or how to enhance a product in a way that would deliver higher value to them. But I think there's also a question of systems, right? And how they make innovation hard for the industry.
So if you think about kind of the operating layer of a health system or a payer of a health org, I think one of the first things you see is there's usually not a common operating layer. Like each team within an org they have their own solutions, right? They have their own internal solutions. They have their own third-party solutions. And those systems don't speak to one another. Like I'll never forget, I was working with a national payer and one of my colleagues, she shadowed the call center reps for a day. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the heroics these call service reps were going through, they had like eight different systems open at any one time. And they would take a call and they would be investigating and going into these multiple systems, trying to piece the story together and going directly into some of like the core claims processing systems, right? Where if they actually accidentally hit a wrong number, like you're changing the source of truth. So I think that's a big challenge. Another challenge is like, a lot of these core systems were built for a very specific set of requirements, and they haven't been updated, and so they're ossified, right? Like you have another insurance example. Like you have a system that was built for a fully insured product where every single member has access to the same set of products, right? The same set of services. That's very different from an ASO, administrative services only approach, where different employers are going to want different kinds of services. And you need to be able to swap in and out. Hey, this employer and their members get service to this set of solutions. This other one who's choosing this different, you know, bundle, that they get a different set of. The systems just were not built for that. And so they're ossified. That's one big challenge.
So, you know, we've been pretty doom and gloom so far. Lots of problems, not enough people, lots of systems that don't work. So can you talk about some good news, Steve? What are some of the things some of our healthcare clients are doing that is attacking some of these problems and really approaching these problems in maybe not new ways, but maybe new ways of thinking about how to solve these problems?
Yeah. So, you know, the reason, you know, for the backstory here for our listeners, right? Carl and I used to work together years ago at the advisory board company. And when you reached out to me about this health industry lead role, you know, the reason I was excited is because I think there's a paradigm shift starting to happen within the tech space that is allowing engineers to be way more productive, and allowing those engineers within healthcare orgs and the vendors that support them to be way more productive in ways that are ultimately going to allow the business leaders, the clinical leaders, to start building towards that vision that they wanted and escaping the cycle that we've been talking about. So there's a few tools. And you know, me personally, it was like, hey, that's where the work needs to be done. It is empowering those leaders to execute on their visions. And I think what they need is help on the execution, not you know, someone coming in and talking strategy with them. So what we're seeing, I think there's a few things. I think first, and this was not something I think a lot of, you know, one emerging set of tools are low code and no code tools. So best way for our listeners to understand this, if they're not familiar with those terms, you know, if you think about building a consumer website 10 years ago, right? You needed a designer, you needed a front-end engineer to actually build it. If you wanted anything like, hey, you can buy something on this website, you need a back-end engineer to connect it and bring in a payment integration source. You know, now you go on to Squarespace and the design templates are there. It's drag and drop, right? The front-end code is there. The back-end code is there. Hey, you want an integration to a payment processor? Just, you know, let's pull in that widget and all the corresponding code gets pulled in. Like those tools now exist for healthcare. So, you know, one example, one of our partners, Uncork, they've built a set of tools specifically for healthcare to allow healthcare organizations to start putting out very high quality, high fidelity, custom apps, workflows, and customer facing experiences, right? Whether that's a member app, whether that's an interface for providers, like that's happening now. I think one example is Mammocare. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Like Mammocare, yeah. Their patient portal, like how patients come and experience Mammocare, that was built using a low code, no code tool, right? So I think the implication of that, again, is like, you now, your engineers at your org can do more. Whether you're a SaaS vendor who's trying to accelerate your velocity and you know, move things up on the product roadmap, or whether you're an organization, a healthcare payer, insurance company, trying to allow principal investigators who are applying for research grants, hey, you need an app that does X, Y, and Z? Cool. Let's give you limited engineer, like let's get you an engineer who can use these tools to build you that experience in a way that they would not be able to single-handedly build that in the past. I think that's one example.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, no code also, you know, it, as it comes to both patient facing, but also internal facing, I think there's been, and I think this is probably something that happens in all industries, not just healthcare, but the idea that you don't necessarily need strong user interfaces and user design in internal facing applications. This is something Pankaj Chawla has talked about on one of our Innovation Engine podcasts about how investing, there is strong ROI in investing in good user design, good product strategy for internal applications. And no code offers a very strong value prop in being able to deploy better internal systems for things like customer service, right? Case management, all of those areas that require you to integrate a lot of data into a clean front-end user experience. No code really opens up a lot of doors and a lot of efficiencies for health plans and health systems to really be able to put data quicker, easier, and better in front of their staff so that they can serve the member or the patient much better. So I think, you know, it's not just external, right? This opens up a lot of options. And a lot of times the data is there. It's like, how do you visualize it? How do you bring it to the surface so that it's actionable, right? We always talk about next best action and actionable data. I think that's where, you know, where no code really helps, right? It helps you quickly do the front end so that you can get the data unified and the back and the calculations on the back end, all that back end stuff that's so critical to driving the engine and building the engine makes you be able to focus on that as opposed to focus on the engineering build of the front end.
I think similarly on those internal workflows, another kind of emerging tools is just the level of sophistication around robotic process automation.
Yeah.
RPA. There's no dearth of highly manual processes that happen at a healthcare organization. And another one of our partners is UiPath. And they have a suite of RPA tools that have been purpose-built for healthcare organizations to just, you know, when you think of the member call center or care management or claims processing, there is just a lot of rules-bound decision-making that right now is done by a human within that org that doesn't need to be, right? Like, let's automating those decision trees and then flagging the difficult exceptions that should go to that person who can do the manual review, right? So I think that's another big one. And then, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about just, you know, some of the Gen AI, the AI capabilities, right? When it comes to, I think particularly building some of the, like the intelligence layer, right? Like there's Gen AI, there's also Vision AI, you know, OCR, people might think about it as, there is, you know, there's traditional machine learning algorithms that can just extract the right insights at the right time. Which you think back to that example where the poor call center rep is, you know, just searching for this data, and the ability to speed up that process and you know, get them the right data exactly when they need it to answer that question. Yeah. There's just so much opportunity there. Now, I think the challenge with that in particular, and I think this is where we're getting inquiries from some of our healthcare orgs that we serve, right? Is you do need to put in some work on that underlying data layer in order to take advantage of these tools, in order to get the right insights, in order to do the RPA work, in order to build the cool internal workflow or member-facing workflow using a low-code, no-code solution. That like data engineering, how do we standardize this data that's defined in different ways, bring it together in one place, allow, you know, create a layer where we can manipulate that data without changing the underlying data. Like that's where also there's just a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've worked on a number of different AI products and AI projects with when I was at a worked at a large payer. And in all of those instances, the biggest challenge or the biggest issue we had throughout the whole process was always getting that data, getting that accurate data, getting data you could trust. For example, we built a tool that was doing predictive modeling and using machine learning to build feedback loops that would predict if someone who was prescribed opioids, what was their risk, right? What was their chances that they would become, you know, highly addicted to opioids through the process, right? And we would be able to tier that, and we'd be able to do risk scores based off that. And so the health plan could actually intervene earlier for people that had higher risk scores. We were able to predict with 80% accuracy if someone would become an abuser of opioids through that model. But it took a lot of work on the data side. That's where it was really necessary in order to be able to do that. The engineering on the actual solution wasn't as complex as the making sure the data, we could count on the data to be accurate 100% of the time, or at least, you know, within a tolerance, right? I think we're at 98% of the time or something like that. But that was always the challenge. And that's building that data layer, being able to understand that data layer is so critical to being able to do this effectively.
I couldn't agree more with that, Carl.
You know, the other thing about AI for healthcare is that I really think about it in three buckets. You know, we talked about machine learning, we talked about Gen AI and things like that. But really the three buckets are, when we think about Gen AI, it's really how do you create and aggregate knowledge and then provide it, in my mind, to the people that need it at the point of care or the point of service. That could be a system, right? It could be an online system where a member is going in. It could be your portal. It could also be a customer service rep. It could also be a nurse, right? A nurse or a, you know, admission specialist, right? That's admitting people into your hospital. It could be any one of those people. But really, I think about the near-term use cases of Gen AI really being around being able to look, aggregate all the data in your hospital and then aggregate the specific information about a specific person, and then being able to serve up that information you need when you're requesting it. How do you reflect that back? So that's where I really see the Gen AI coming in and being very powerful, and really maybe not replacing the person, but making the person more efficient, making them more accurate. I think in healthcare, there's always the concern about bias, about processing information correctly. And I think with Gen AI, there's real risk there. And I think it's an empowerment tool. It's an efficiency tool. It's a tool that makes us better at our jobs, but might not truly replace the individual in a lot of those roles, because we still want that judgment and we still want that interaction with a person. It doesn't mean there aren't instances where you would have Gen AI speaking directly to a member or customer or whatever that is, but I think we're going to see a lot of applications in that space. The second space is the vision AI, the ML, the OCR, all those pieces around creating either better workflows and better processes and eliminating places where people are inserted in the processes where they're effectively operating as software, right? People as software. That's not necessary, and they're not providing value or judgment, and being able to replace that. And the machine learning is the other part of that, where you're really driving insights. The third piece is on the development side and using things like GitHub Copilot, right? Copilot as part of your code process, Tab9 as part of the code process, all those different tools that are coming in that make developers more efficient, right? We're talking about the fact that we don't have enough. Well, there are a lot of tools that actually will sit with the developer in the future using AI capabilities that will make them more efficient, that will make it more possible, even if you're not using a low-code or no-code solution, to be faster in developing solutions that meet your needs. And so you'll be able to do more with less. And so I think that's the other part that we haven't really touched on here. That's more of a technical application, and it's not specific to healthcare, but I think it has the ability to drive healthcare organizations forward and begin to allow them to do more of this development and more custom development on their behalf, as opposed to relying on third parties and SaaS vendors to do that.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm excited. This is the work 3Pillar is doing that I'm excited about, right? Whether it's the vendors we serve, the healthcare organizations directly, you can't just give an organization these tools if they don't have kind of the product, if they don't have enough people who are versed in agile design and kind of that product mindset, the designers, the product managers, the engineer, like if you don't have enough of that institutional knowledge, just dropping in these tools and saying, hey, you know, VP of Pop Health, like, go create a new Pop Health portal. like it's not going to be successful. So I think one thing is bringing that, being able to extend that product mindset across an organization. We're really good at that. You know, like, let's make sure we deliver value quickly, that it's tied to the business objectives, iterate upon how we're building something, and then bringing those tools we've been discussing to bear in that. And then I think second, doing that core data engineering work so that you have a strong foundation for everything we've been talking about to sit upon, right? How do you bring together all the different data, standardize it so that it means the same thing, be able to create an environment where you can manipulate that data and run analytics on it without changing the core underlying data. That is what's needed in healthcare right now. It's not the high level business strategy. The leaders know that. Let's get to actually building and moving forward, and the tools available now just allow healthcare organizations to do more faster.
Yeah, it's interesting. You hit on, I think, an important point, right? All these tools, all the solutions, it's critical that you can't no code, AI assist for code development, all of these solutions, RPA, all of these solutions are great, but they do not. One thing that all these solutions do not replace is understanding the product mindset, having not just your product team, but your developers understand, what are the business objectives we're trying to do with this project? What are the initiatives we're trying to achieve? What is the goal? How are we trying to change the lives of our members, the lives of our patients? How are we trying to change and make the lives of our fellow coworkers better through this process, through what the tool we're developing, for the solution we're developing, for the data where we're redesigning and re-engineering so that it's more useful? That's something that none of these tools do. So you can't just hand it to someone, right? You can't just hand it and walk away and then say, all right, great. They now have a no-code solution. They now have, Gen AI. Awesome. They're going to produce us a thing that's going to be great. You have to bring that mindset of how you're going to use it. And that hasn't changed. You know, that's the one thing, that everything's transformative right now. But the fact that you still have to understand your needs and rely on your business to give that to you, then you have to have the people that can build a solution to those needs, no matter what tools they're using, is critical to this, and something that hasn't changed. Like that's the one constant I think that we're seeing here, and the one area that I think is going to be very difficult for new technology to replace is how do you actually build something to meet a need?
Yep.
So Steve, as we wrap up our conversation today, I just wanted to know, in 5 years, what would make you happy to see as all these new technologies and all these new opportunities come to organizations, what would make you happiest to see be the new landscape of healthcare technology?
That the VPs in these organizations feel like they are not held back experimenting with putting their vision out there. That they feel like building software is not the constraint that's keeping them from improving the pharmacy benefits space, from putting together better support tools for brokers, for managing population health at a better level. That people feel that, hey, if they have an idea, they can move forward with it because the engineering capacity is not this artificial constraint on what they can do. That's the dream. That's the dream right there.
Excellent. Steve, thank you so much for your time today and discussing about how we propel healthcare forward and some of the challenges and opportunities that sit in front of us. We look forward to seeing more of you as Three Pillars Healthcare Industry Lead. And where can we find you if we want more information?
So we'll be posting, we'll be starting to post blog posts on the Three Pillar website. We're going to be interviewing I will be interviewing a number of healthcare leaders that I really respect right here on this podcast. And of course, we'll be cross-posting on LinkedIn as well. Excited to engage with the healthcare leaders I've worked with and meet new leaders and hear about their challenges and bring the exceptional product and engineering leaders we have to see how we can help them.
This has been an episode of The Innovation Engine, a podcast from 3Pillar Global. 3Pillar is a digital product development and innovation partner that helps companies compete and win in the digital economy. To learn more about 3Pillar Global and how we can help you, visit our website at 3pillarglobal.com. Thanks for listening and see you next time.